A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 331. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Ghost in the Water. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. A 1982 BBC ghost story aimed at family viewing, 50 minutes long, single episode, broadcast on New Year's Eve of 1982. And some interesting stuff for us to talk about as we go through it, Brian.
Absolutely. And this will be our seasonal December Christmas ghost story, although it's a New Year's link in this case. So the setup involves a schoolgirl called Tess, who becomes interested in the story of a young Victorian woman who died over 100 years ago in the local area. So she's interested in local history, and her history teacher and her classmates at school encourage her to investigate this story further.
Yes, that's right. And she learns that she may have a strange connection to this young Victorian woman who went by the name of Abigail Parks. And the more she investigates, the more she looks into the case, the more strange things start to happen to Tess herself. And one of the things we get as this story progresses is the idea that Tess may in some way be possessed by the spirit of poor Abigail, as events from the past, well, they start to influence the present in this one, Brian.
That's right. And we have this mix of history and investigating history with these spookier ghost ideas. So looking at the characters, Tess is played by Judith Allchurch. She's a 14-year-old schoolgirl with an interest in history and a strange connection to the past.
Yes, which we've already hinted at and we'll talk about more as we go on. Plus her friend David, played by Ian Stevens, a school friend, sort of her fellow researcher on this sort of history project they've embarked upon. And of course, he gets to help her deliver a lot of the backstory to us, the audience. So he does a lot of research and tells Tess about various bits and pieces he's found out. Yeah, it's a nice sort of team up of two very sort of genuine teens. You get the feeling that they really are a pair of school kids on a project and starting to investigate the past.
Yes, that's right. They're both doing research into this and they're both sort of encouraging each other. And it's a nice setup having the two of them there. Mrs. Willits, played by Jane Freeman, best known for Last of the Summer Wine, is Tess's mother, also delivering some of the history and talking about some of the things that are involved in this as well.
Yes, it turns out that Tess's family know a little bit about it, and so do a few other people that she talks to. There's also Jean Willits, Tess's older sister, played by Joanne James, who provides, you know, some typical older sister stuff. But also, interestingly, Joanne James also plays the part of Abigail Parks in what we might call flashback sequences, or we might even call something else. We'll see as we go on.
Yes, so there's definitely the connection, not just of Tess to the past, but of her whole family to the past. Mr. Turner, played by Paul Copley, is the history teacher who encourages Tess and David as well to investigate this little bit of history through some things they have and through investigating things.
Yes, it's good fun. I mean, like I say, it's a school project that leads to a more in-depth investigation and some spooky happenings.
Yeah, absolutely. So Abigail Parks, who is the ghost or perhaps the ghost in this, we learn more about her as we go on. We learn that she drowned in 1860. That was how she died. The coroner ruled her death a suicide, which was frowned upon at the time, to say the least. It was considered a mortal sin, which was, you know, had a big impact on how things were done at that point. And we question, in what we're seeing, what actually happened with her death. Was it really a suicide, or was it something else?
And for a story that's investigating the past, it's nice to have, I think, some historical artifacts. And in a ghost story, I think we often get these artifacts, which may or may not have power of their own. So we have a couple of things that Tess comes into contact with, which conceal some clues. Interestingly, there's an embroidered sampler. You probably know these things. These pieces of embroidery, often produced by Victorian children as a piece of artwork, and they may be preserved in picture frames and so on over the years. So there's one in Tess's house, which seems to have been created by Abigail Parks herself, and that contains some clues as to what was going on. And then there's her older sister, Jean, with her boyfriend. And the boyfriend has got a gold ring, which he... Well, the ring was found by the nearby canal, and he bought it off the people who found it. And he's using this as the engagement ring to get engaged to Tess's older sister. But, of course, the ring itself has got some history. And that's a fascinating piece of the past. And how it came to be in the canal is part of our story. And then just to sort of even, you know, add a bit more action to the story, one day Tess and David come home from school to discover firefighters and fire engines around the house and a large part of land cordoned off. And there's been a cave-in, I guess what we'd now call a sinkhole, near her house, which reveals some of the mining history of the area and a few more connections to the past, and allows, as you say, Brian, Tess's mother, Mrs. Willits, to fill us in on a little bit more local history. So there's this sort of emerging story with all these bits and pieces of the past almost breaking through into the present.
Yes, that's right. And we have a mixture of the idea that these objects, the ring, the embroidered sampler, have power in and of themselves in this sort of ghost story style way. We have the mixture of that and the idea that these artifacts are leading us to the history and leading Tess to the history, and that it's not about these objects, it's about the history and what happened. So it has this interesting mix of being sort of quite traditional ghost story at some points and much more history related in other points, which is an interesting way for it to be set up.
Yeah, quite fascinating.
So getting into our production notes, Ghost in the Water was based on a 1973 novel of the same name by Edward Chisholm. Chisholm was a history teacher and a university lecturer who wrote about local history and also wrote some historical books about the Brontes. And it appears that this was his only novel, but he certainly had a big background as a historian, which has a lot of influence on this story.
Yes, I mean, it's fascinating, actually, because he does seem to be a Black Country historian, although, as you say, his specialist subject seems to be the Bronte sisters. But yeah, he wrote this book, and as we were discussing just before we recorded, it was a Puffin book. So this is an imprint, I believe, of Penguin aimed at younger readers. And it's fascinating. I do actually have a copy. And the only thing I've just noticed is that in the book, Tess is actually called Teresa. I'm not quite sure why they chose the name, because all the other names appear to be the same. But anyway, but there you go. And it was adapted for the BBC by Geoffrey Case, a writer who's written episodes of Inspector Morse, Minder, and perhaps most relevant to us on British Invaders, an ITV children's anthology series called Dramarama, which was a sort of spooky sci-fi anthology that we may get to at some point in future years.
Yes, that's an interesting one as well.
And Ghost in the Water was directed by Rennie Rye, again, you know, well-known TV director who's done work on Midsummer Murders and Poirot, but probably best known to us for a 1985 show, somewhat of a Christmas classic, Brian, The Box of Delights.
Yes, definitely a classic, one that we covered on British Invaders very early on and enjoyed quite a bit. That did a very nice job of bringing a classic book to the screen.
Yes, a much-loved Christmas classic. I believe British Invaders episodes 5 and 6, Brian, back then with Xander.
That's right, right from the early days.
So, turning back to Ghost on the Water, this is, as we've said, this was a novel set in the Black Country, written by a chap who's a noted historian of the Black Country in the Midlands and here in England. And so they took the production there and used the sort of, particularly, the, you know, the very area that he was writing about. This area of the Midlands associated with mining and other local industries. Very regional, this production.
Yes, and they used a lot of local people as cast, not professional actors in many cases. And the two teenage leads really didn't appear in anything else. So these were very much sort of authentic portrayals of the accents and the style and way of speaking of people from that area. And the school, the cemetery, the canal, scenes on buses and things like that are all done very realistically and done very much with local locations and given that feel to reflect that area at what was the current time at that point.
And I must say, I mean, we'll talk about this more next time, but I did love the fact that they're using very genuine accents, very genuine people. You know, the other people on the bus scenes, they're clearly just local people sitting on a bus going about their business. I really enjoyed that part of this production. You know, it's very well done and nice to hear something that isn't BBC received pronunciation and sort of home counties, but they've moved this very definitely into the Black Country with those lovely accents.
Absolutely. And with the influence of a historian writing this, they bring a lot of sort of realistic historical research into it as well. So there isn't, you know, one librarian who hands them everything they need in one scene. They go and talk to one person and then another person and have to request information that can be sent to them from elsewhere. And it builds things up in that way, you know, in that way, which is quite interesting and nice to see. Ghost in the Water was broadcast on the BBC on December 31st of 1982.
And it's always nice to know a little bit about what's going on around the time of the broadcast. And the interesting thing here is that this show actually featured briefly on Blue Peter. So it does tell you a little bit about the target audience of this show, that there was a clip from it on Blue Peter, and you can see a clip of two of the Blue Peter presenters talking about the production and trailing it for coming up on the BBC at New Year's Eve.
Yeah, if there's any indication that you can use to say that a show is aimed at children in the UK and that it is at least somewhat high profile in how it's being released and broadcast, it's the Blue Peter feature. A long-running children's series, Blue Peter, would cover these sorts of things very often.
Splendid indeed, yes. We know the show made a big impression at the time because, again, it's one of these shows that people remember as particularly spooky and interesting from perhaps their childhood viewing, but strangely doesn't seem to ever have been repeated, which I guess takes us to talking about the availability and how we've got to watch this show now. So here in Region 2, what we're talking about is a 2018 Simply Media DVD from the BBC, currently going for about £10. Has obviously the film or the TV episode we're talking about, and it does in fact include, as the sort of solitary extra, that Blue Peter segment featuring the Blue Peter presenters from 1982, Peter Duncan and Sarah Ghostwatch Green herself. So 10 years or so before Ghostwatch, here she is. You get to see the young Sarah Green well on her way to becoming the nation's sweetheart that we saw affected by the terrible events of Ghostwatch so much later.
That is an interesting connection to draw there.
Yep, absolutely. More ghosts as well, but of a much different kind. I should say that it's not on any of the streaming sites. It's only on DVD over here in Region 2. Across the pond in Region 1.
In Region 1, there is no release. There is an import I saw for $13 Canadian on Amazon.ca. I did not see it on Amazon.com. So there's that import, or importing it directly from the UK and playing a Region 2 DVD are your options. The original novel by Edward Chisholm is out of print, but there are used copies available, and they are quite inexpensive.
Yes, and I've got one. And here it is, a Puffin paperback, which cost at the time 95 pence. And I've flicked through it and sort of sped read parts of it, and can tell you that it does seem to be that this production is remarkably faithful. It's very, very similar to the book, apart from the strange change of the title character, or rather the lead character's name, from Teresa to Tess. And I'll just read you a little bit of the author's note, who says that this story is set in and around Rowley Regis and Old Hill in the Black Country, and many of the places described are quite real, and some of the incidents really happened. But there was no coal mine near Slack Hillock called Fiery Holes, and anyone who tried to walk along the towpath towards Ghosty Hill Canal Tunnel is in for a surprise, which is rather mysterious. But there you go. So, very much as we say, a Black Country novel and a Black Country production.
Very nice. So next time, we will fill in more of the historical details as Tess gets closer to the truth about Abigail Parks.
And we'll talk a little bit of how this fits into our canon of seasonal ghost stories, or perhaps spooky children's shows that we've discussed in the past. We'll sort of categorize this, I guess, as we go on.
Absolutely. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group. We always have some nice discussions going on there, probably now about Christmas ghost stories.
Excellent stuff, and we are also members of the Voice of Geeks Network, and you will find all you need to know about us and that at VogNetwork.com. VogNetwork.com for the Voice of Geeks Network.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also, signing off.